I don't think they look at limits like that, frankly, and I don't mean that to sound arrogant, but best player in baseball is out there. Why not go get him? If it was a 1-year deal, I think absolutely your point would be 100% valid. But it's a 10-year deal. So the Dodgers hope that, they're going to let this year take care of that. And in the meantime, have one of the best hitters in the National League at the top of their lineup.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by the only person, the best person I could think of to kind of put into context the past week in the business of baseball, and that is, of course, Bill Shaken of the Los Angeles Times. Bill, thank you so much for joining me. I guess I'll start with this question. You're right there at the epicenter of the Shohei Ohtani news. So when is $700 million not worth $700 million?
When you don't get it today. So if, if I give you $700 million, Derek, as much as I would like to be able to do that today, you've got $700 million to spend. If I give you essentially a promise to give you $700 million years from now, after the rate of inflation has destroyed the value of that $700 million and lowered it significantly, it's still $700 million, but it's not the $700 million that it would be worth today.
So is this, the $700 million is all about having the right to say it's the largest contract, even though without the deferred money and everything like that, the present day value would still make it the largest contract ever. So what's... why, in your view, did they structure it this way?
Well, in terms of bragging rights, if we want to use that term, for CAA, which is the mega big Hollywood agency that includes the agent that represents Ohtani, it never hurts to be able to go to current and, more importantly, prospective clients and say, we negotiated the largest contract for any athlete ever in any sport, $700 million. That's a pretty good thing. Mm-hmm. As far as the structure for Ohtani and the Dodgers in particular, what the Dodgers get out of this is, again, they're not paying $700 million today, and they can use the money that they're not using for $700 million today to go out and get some other players and improve their chances of winning the World Series.
Which I guess was a big part of the courtship, right? Like, I mean, that it is both in Ohtani's best interest and the Dodgers' best interest to structure a contract that is going to be worth mega millions so that it doesn't capsize the team, right? Like, what fun is that for him if he's chasing a championship, right? That's essentially where this started from, right?
Yeah, I mean, Shohei hasn't really said anything over the years about what specifically he would be looking for. He didn't say anything during his free agency courtship period. When he has his big press conference at Dodger Stadium, I don't think he's going to be very specific other than saying, the Dodgers were a good fit. But the only thing he said specifically over the years was that he wanted to win. And it's great that a player wants to win. It's even greater that he picks a team that will enable him to win. Because really, if you want to get into the playoffs where Ohtani's never been, your best bet is probably to join the team that's been there 11 straight years. But beyond that, he's actually making, and I don't want to use the words financial sacrifice because it pains me to say that for someone who's going to be making that level of money. But,
right,
he could have forced the Dodgers to pay him more money up front. And he was very clear, according to his agent, that, he wanted the Dodgers to be able to have the resources to win because he spent the last 6 years team with Mike Trout. So if it were just two guys that could get you to the playoffs, he would have been in the playoffs already. It's clearly not.
Before we get into what this means for the future and the future for other teams, I want to dial it back and kind of structure the conversation around the past, present, and future. Can you take us into the past of this? This Dodger courtship of Shohei Ohtani is not just about this offseason. This goes back years, right? This goes back even to back when the National League didn't have a DH and they really couldn't offer him what he wanted.
It goes even farther, actually, because when Shohei Ohtani was coming out of high school in Japan, you know, there's no rule that says you have to play pro ball in Japan. You could leave and go play your pro ball somewhere else. If you signed to play pro ball in Japan, then you got to wait a while till you can come to the majors. But the Dodgers tried to sign Ohtani out of high school. And at that point, there were a lot of teams, the Dodgers would not have been alone, that would have said, hey, you're 17 years old. Probably your future is going to be in pitching, or probably your future is going to be in hitting, because after all, who did both at an elite level? And Shohei Ohtani was listening to the Dodgers and to other teams. And then the team he ultimately signed with in Japan said, we think we can do a program for you that will develop you as a pitcher and a hitter. We will let you do both. We'll see how it goes. If it goes well, keep on doing it. And if it goes so well that you want to go to the major leagues before you're a free agent under the Japanese rules, we will let you go. So that was time number one the Dodgers tried to get him. Time number two, I think, as you mentioned, Derek, was when he did come over to the United States. And as you alluded to, there were a lot of things the Dodgers could have offered him, but the DH at that point was not one of them. So the Angels could, and he signed there.
And then what has this been like for you covering and watching as the ability to be a two-way player kind of manifested? I mean, there was a lot of doubt, right, in spring training with the Angels, his first day on the field.
In his first spring training, we were running up to the general manager and asking, is there language in the contract that prevents you from sending him to the minor leagues? Because he looked awful, frankly. And there wasn't that language, but the Angels had made a promise and clearly they were going to honor it. And, you know, after we started playing for keeps, you could see that the talent was there. It still took a while to develop because he was getting adjusted to the major leagues. But, you know, I would argue the last three seasons are probably the greatest three seasons any player has had in major league history.
And how did the Dodgers then prepare, watching from just up the interstate there as they eyed this player? It wasn't a secret of their intention to go out and sign him. So what preparations did they make leading into this offseason to make the best bid for him?
Well, they came out of the 2022 season kind of stunned. You know, they had won their 100 plus games as usual. They had smoked the Padres by 22 games in the National League West. And then they got to the playoffs and the Padres took care of the Dodgers. And that was the end of it. And the Dodgers are in the fortunate slash unfortunate position of having disappointing 100 win seasons, because now everybody's spoiled and expects that a league championship series and a World Series are almost part of the schedule every year. Mm-hmm. And when they're not, people get upset. So everybody thought last year the Dodgers need to go out into the free agent market and get the best players they can find. And they really didn't. They actually turned it into what in most cities would be called a rebuilding year. They put a kid at Miguel Vargas at second base just to try him. They were going to play Gavin Lux at shortstop before he got hurt. And then they gave center field to another rookie named James Outman. They used a lot of rookie pitchers. Some of them pitched well. Some of them did not. Because they're the Dodgers, and they, of course, start with Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, they did just fine. They won their 100 games. They got to the playoffs. But a lot of what they did not do last winter was to make sure that they had the payroll space, the financial flexibility, whatever you want to call it, to go make a strong run at Shohei Ohtani.
And at the same time, then the Angels decided to keep Shohei Ohtani, not trade him. And there are all kinds of reasons for that. They made deals at the deadline to seemingly improve and try to make some kind of run. It did not work out. And Ohtani then has surgery and hasn't really spoken with the media since then. And it's still not clear, right, what surgery he had. That'll have to be cleared up at the press conference. So how did the season end for Shohei Ohtani with the Angels as he then became a free agent? More mystery than anything?
A little bit. I mean, Dylan Hernandez, one of my colleagues, has reported that he actually did have a second Tommy John surgery. So we know that.
There you
But
go.
they did not say that. I'm sure the teams had access to the medical records, so
Oh,
it
of
wouldn't be an
course, yeah.
issue for the teams. But you're right, we don't really know a lot about what's been happening. And in fact, after it was revealed that some sort of surgery would be necessary, Ohtani's agent had a press briefing in Anaheim, and it was essentially to encourage reporters to go out and tell a good story and a happy story, and this is going to be fine, and he's in a good place. And it wasn't really as much of a question and answer thing as it was a cheerleading session. And I don't say that to knock Nez Bilela, who's Shohei's agent, because you have to serve your client, and clearly Nez has done a good job of serving his client. And if that's what his client wants, then that's what you say. But there certainly has not been anything from Shohei, and very little from anyone else.
So he won't be able to pitch in 2024. It is his second Tommy John, as Dylan reported, and as you just kind of said. So there's questions about how he'll come back from that. That leads me to like the question of the moment. Does he make the Dodgers better? Does he make them a favorite, or does he just make them more popular?
I think both,
Okay.
because look, if you got a pitcher coming off a second Tommy John, and he's not the only one, the Dodgers have Walker Buehler.
Right.
And if you look at the Dodgers rotation as we record this podcast, it is Walker Buehler coming off a second Tommy John. We don't know how long he's going to be able to pitch. We don't know how many innings they're going to let him pitch. We don't know how effective he's going to be. And then four kids. When the season starts, of course, the Dodgers will not have Walker Buehler and four kids in their rotation.
No.
A
In a few
sign they'll
weeks, they
make a
may
change.
not. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe tomorrow they may not.
Yeah. In a
But
few hours, they may not. Yeah.
yeah, but that's kind of where they are. But I bring it up because if it turns out Walker Buehler needs a little more time to recover his strength or his finesse or whatever, his pitching just isn't up to snuff at the beginning of the season, there's nothing else he can do for the Dodgers. Shohei Ohtani is not going to pitch for the Dodgers this year. He might still hit 50 home runs.
But does that make like I just watched the Cardinals team that didn't have much pitching finish last place in the division with two finalists for the MVP from the previous year, including the winner. Now, that's not to say that I mean, they still had a pretty good offense when they were healthy, top seven, but they could not catch up pitching wise. Pitching is the game. So if the Dodgers don't have pitching, how do they get better?
They will. I mean, all the young pitchers that they used in their so-called rebuilding year are now a year older. They're not all
Okay.
going to pan out, but they've
Yeah.
got enough that some of them certainly will. And I will say this for the Dodgers, they have been so good for so long that they don't really approach things as we must do everything in the winter, because they don't have to think, are we going to be in the playoff hunt? They are going to be in the playoff hunt.
Great point.
And they can wait till June or July and see what they need and go get guys then. I mean, if you look at the National League West, we've had a few years here where you think somebody else is catching up. You know, the Giants won 107 games a couple of years ago. Oh, the Giants are going to be great now for a few years. They're not. The Rockies one year pushed the Dodgers to game 163 in a tiebreaker. Rockies look good for the next few years. They're not. Padres, right? They spent, I mean, a gazillion dollars. They didn't even make the playoffs last year. Still good players, but we don't know. Diamondbacks, great young team, went to the World Series last year, still finished 16 games behind the Dodgers. So we don't know. The only thing we know is the Dodgers are going to be in the race.
So the interesting thing to me, as we just outlined, is that the Dodgers have long had their eye on Shohei Ohtani, just as you outlined, just all the way back to high school. They even prepped a year ago for this. You know, they were ready for it. But for them to be a contender, did they need him to kind of defer this much money just so they can go out and acquire even high dollar? They're talking about Yamamoto, Glasnow. You know, I don't know if Snell fits into it, but you know, Giolito, for example. I mean, did they need him to do this with his contract just so they could afford the pitching they must have to contend? And if he wasn't willing to do this contract, would they have still done it and then kind of said, well, we'll figure out the pitching on the go?
Well, based on what his agent has said, this was more Shohei's idea than the Dodgers' idea.
Okay.
And that's not to say the Dodgers wouldn't have wanted to defer money. They've done it in Mookie Betts' contract. They've done it in Freddie Freeman's contract. I'm sure they wanted to defer some because why not, right? It costs you less to pay off that money down the road. But to the extent that a team would have come in with the proposal and said, we'd like you to defer $68 out of $70 million. I wish I had so much confidence to propose that.
Yeah.
And in fact, Farhan Zaidi, the general manager of the Giants, said to the Giants reporters the other day that Otani's agent had made the same proposal to the Giants. So it came from the player, or at least from the agent.
Do you think their need to add pitching outweighs their want? I guess this is the way I could phrase it. Do you think their need to add pitching this winter to be a World Series favorite should have outweighed their want to sign Shohei Ohtani?
I don't think they look at limits like that, frankly, and I don't mean that to sound arrogant, but
no, that's fine. That's
player
true.
Best player in baseball is out there. You know, why not go get him? If it was a one-year deal, I think absolutely your point would be 100% valid. But it's a 10-year deal. And the one thing we all know about signing pitchers to long-term contracts is they are going to get hurt at some point during that deal. So the Dodgers hope that, you know, they're going to let this year take care of that. And in the meantime, you know, have one of the best hitters in the National League at the top of their lineup.
I've been asked a lot, as I'm sure of you, is if this new contract resets the market. And, you know, I've kind of tried to work up a good answer about it. I guess if Juan Soto this coming year pitches like Gerrit Cole for the Yankees, then the market is set for him. But as long as Juan Soto is hitting like Juan Soto, but not pitching like Gerrit Cole, then the market really hasn't changed. Ohtani kind of doubled everything with all this deferred money, but it isn't like that. He might have changed the AAV of current dollar values, right? Like if that's 46-ish against the CBT, maybe that rises a little bit, but it was going to rise a little bit to begin with. Do you think the total wallop of this contract changes anything about the market?
I agree with you. I don't think it does a whole lot because the market for elite two-way players is limited to one guy right now.
So then what about the structure of it? Does the structure of it change maybe the future of contracts in the market?
It might, but I think the thing you have to keep in mind with Ohtani, and I don't think this is true for any other Major League Baseball player, is, you know, what was the old saying from the movie, right? Show me the money?
Yeah.
So if Shohei Ohtani is getting the $2 million from the Dodgers next year that he's going to get, this does not mean that all he's getting is $2 million of income, period. He made $40 million last year in endorsements.
Mm-hmm.
That was according to Sportico's estimates, where they said no other Major League Baseball player even made more than $7 million. He's just in another global stratosphere, which is understandable given his background and heritage. So he can take all his money in endorsements, still make just about more than any other player, and then, you know, cash in on the deferred money later. If you can find other players that are marketed as well and appeal to as many people as well, I guess this is something of a pattern or a precedent, but I don't think you see that anymore with baseball players than you do with, you know, two-way guys on the field. He just does stuff nobody else does.
It's fascinating. As we're talking here, AP starts putting out details of the contract, as I'm sure, you know, you've had some of you, all the reporters out there have looked at, and one of them does give him the chance to opt out if the controlling owner or Andrew Friedman lose their position as some kind of sign of stability and maybe as some kind of sign of, you know, that they've maintained competitiveness. So it gives him this interesting clause that if they don't follow through on being competitive, that he can opt out, according to the Associated Press, which another like interesting gizmo that as we talk about, like how could just the structure of the contract frame things? If you could, you know, when Albert Pujols was a free agent, the talk here was, and the Cardinals went to Major League Baseball, could they offer him some part of the team? Was ownership of the team something they could put on the table, even a sliver of it? So now you see these creative elements in Shohei Ohtani saying, I wonder if some of them are going to be copied.
Yeah, and we had actually asked the other day when the details started to trickle out, said, huh, it'd be interesting because if they're deferring $680 million till the end of the contract, and Shohei is 29, he'll play his age 30 season next year, so maybe he's done after 10 years. Who knows? What if he could just take that money and have the option to turn that into an ownership stake?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We asked, that's not part of the contract, apparently. But
that's interesting.
It could. I mean, just because it's not in there now doesn't mean it could never happen. And I think the more relevant part to the clause you mentioned that the AP reported about having the chance to opt out if either the owner or the president of baseball operations is not there, it's because these guys win. They put a winner on the field every year. They provide the resources for a winner. Some people like how the Dodgers do it. Some may not, but, you know, results are results. And, you know, if you're Shohei Ohtani and you played your entire major league career, not only not getting into the playoffs, but even not playing on a team with a winning record. Yeah, I could see where that would be important to you.
So already this winter, Soto, who is going to set a record when he hits free agency and is still within the arbitration system, and he's going to make a lot of money through arbitration, goes to the Yankees via a trade as the Padres try to divest themselves of some salary and lower their payroll. Oh, Shohei Ohtani signs with the Dodgers, but the Dodgers aren't done. They're still in play for possibly a $25 million a year pitcher for next year in Tyler Glasnow. They're courting Yamamoto, who could be anywhere from a total outlay of $300 million, possibly, if you look at the posting fee. What is a team in flyover country to do, Bill? What can they do?
I don't know, but I just got back from covering a World Series that involves teams in Phoenix and Dallas. So I guess it's all right. You know, it's that crapshoot Billy Beane liked to talk about. Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Look, if this was going to be the Premier League and the team with the best record was just declared the champion at the end of the season, I'd actually have seen some parades in this millennium in Los Angeles. I have not seen one because the Dodgers only won one year and it was COVID, and God forbid we have congregations of people. So, you know, that's what the playoffs are all about. I mean, Diamondbacks this year, Phillies last year. All you got to do is get, I mean, the Dodgers found that out, right? I mean, they crushed the Padres in the regular season 2 years ago. Padres dumped them in the playoffs. Diamondbacks, same thing this year. That's, I guess, what flyover country is here to do.
I guess, but then you look up and you go, okay, the Texas Rangers spent $500 million on free agent infielders who played the same position on the same day. And the Phillies went out and got Bryce Harper, who's now talking about an extension, and then went, what, nine figures to keep their ace in Aaron Nola. You know, just you have the RSN. I don't want to stand on a soapbox for, you know, the teams here who could spend more, including the Cardinals. They could spend more money. But it seems like, you know, the Cardinals talk about this notion that, like, if they want to make a bid for a Japanese player, they have geography working against them. So then do they have to outbid? And if the bidding is going to get like it is now, then will they ever outbid? It's such a fascinating time right now, because I just wonder if the spending is going to the coasts. So, man, the development has to go to the middle. Is that what has to happen?
I think the Guardians probably say yes. And after so many years, probably the Cardinals too, because if you look at what's happened with the Dodgers, it wasn't just that they spent money. Lots of teams spend money and don't make it to the World Series. It's been, what, 14 years since the Yankees got there? The Dodgers are basically what everybody thought would happen if you ever got Moneyball principles with actual money.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew Friedman, who came from Tampa Bay, has done a great job of that. Because when you look at the Dodgers, you don't see nine guys who are all bought at the top of the free agent market. And in fact, Andrew Friedman said one of the reasons he was successful in Tampa Bay was because for a while, that's exactly what the Red Sox and Yankees did. They just bought up players on the free agent market. They turned out to be guys who were getting paid more for what they had done before than what they were going to do, because they were often in their 30s, and they burned and crashed, or crashed and burned. Sorry. Now the Red Sox and Yankees know better. All the teams do, but the Dodgers have a very robust player development system, and they put a lot of money into scouting. They put a lot of money in minor leagues. They put a lot of money into nutrition, a lot of things that are not just, you know, going out and buying people on the free agent market.
Yeah, they used to talk about the Dodgers, $18 million payroll at AAA that allowed them to kind of create depth. I don't know if it was actually $18 million, but, you know, this idea that they were able to create kind of that stockpile 4A players there so they could cycle through them for depth if there were injuries above, or say there was a little elasticity in the injury list, you know, they could go through that, and those guys were paid well. And that was the appeal. They would sign for minor league deals. They were paid well, and the Dodgers could create, they just created depth that way that other teams did not. And I think that's to be admired. And then also the support staff. The support staff with the Dodgers is remarkable, what they do and how advanced they are and how they really look to the cutting edge.
They do. I mean, there used to be an extra clubhouse in Dodger Stadium. And you may have seen it, Derek, passing on the way down to the visiting clubhouse.
Cardinal fans probably remember that place from, what was it, 2013, when Adam Wainwright made his comment about the Dodgers' Mickey Mouse antics.
And they've basically taken that over and just given it to their analytics staff because they ran out of room in the main office. They have a ton of folks there. I was going to say, though, if you look at in terms of player development and scouting, the Dodgers certainly haven't cut back there. They're not a full, we just do video analytics and stuff and scout people. So if you look at their draft in, and I know I'm just cherry picking year, but just to give you an idea of what they've done under Andrew Friedman, in 2016, their number one pick was Gavin Lux, who's going to be their starting shortstop next year, and was going to be last year before he got hurt. Their second pick was Will Smith, who's an all-star catcher. Their fourth pick was Mitch White, who they were able to use in a trade. Their fifth pick was Dustin May, who helped them win the World Series in 2020. He's coming back from Tommy John surgery at some point, but he should be good. I'm looking down. This is Tony Gonsolin, who pitched in the World Series, came in the ninth round. Dean Kramer, who starts for the Orioles, one of the guys that they traded to get Manny Machado a few years ago. He was their 14th round pick. Zach McKinstry, they've used in a trade, was their 33rd round pick. Like, that's not money. That's just good solid scouting.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm thinking through. I mean, obviously, they traded for Mookie Betts, who is one of the best all-around players in the game. When they had the opportunity, they signed Freddie Freeman as a free agent, who is an MVP and one of the better hitters. But Otani's really the time when they got the best available free agent, right? Am I off base on that?
No, other than, you know, keeping Kershaw at the height of his career.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, Mookie Betts was going to be out there in his walk year.
They got ahead of that.
So the Dodgers said, we'll take him, we'll pay him, we'll take David Price's contract too. But I think, you know, a lot of people look around and say, okay, who are these guys out there every day for the Dodgers? So last year, one of their key contributors was Jason Hayward, who everybody thought was done and was so bad the Cubs wouldn't even let him finish out his contract in Chicago. Max Muncy, who has been an all-star for the Dodgers, was signed as a minor league free agent. Chris Taylor was acquired from Seattle as a minor league shortstop, became an all-star. He was acquired for a minor league pitcher named Zach Lee, who, you know, was more famous as a quarterback recruit in the SEC.
So, all right. So then they go out, they get the best available free agent. They spend the most money ever for this free agent. They defer the most money ever for a free agent. How worried should the Cardinals be about their lead in total World Series championships for a National League team? I mean, are the Dodgers coming for that 11 to overtake them?
Well, that's kind of the mission statement, right? I don't think they're doing this just to make money because, frankly, there's easier ways to make money in baseball. The A's have probably shown you that over the last few years. So, they're in it to win. They're not sparing any expense. It's kind of really what you want to see. You know, when the new owners came in, and they came in, mind you, replacing an owner who had filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Thinking like the Dodgers in bankruptcy. Oh, my God. So these guys come in and they say, we're going to do two things. We're going to rebuild the team because the minor league system is terrible, but we don't want the fans to have to wait 3 to 5 years. We're not doing a tank job here. We're also going to spend at the top of the market so we can win as soon as possible and then sustain it. And when you hear somebody say financial flexibility or sustainable core, you should always run the other way, because it's usually jargon for an owner who doesn't want to spend that much money and a general manager who always has a five-year plan ahead of him to try to keep his job. But in LA, that's actually what happened. They spent a lot of money early. They took on $250 million to get Adrian Gonzalez and a couple other guys from the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. They picked up Hanley Ramirez from the Marlins. They gave Andre Ethier $85 million to be a supporting outfielder. They spent the money. They gave Kershaw his $215 million. Right. And then all of a sudden, all the money they had spent in player development started to pay off. And they've been able to balance those things in a way that, you know, like I said, everybody says they're going to do that, but really is hard to pull off.
So what does success look like then under the Ohtani decade for the Dodgers? What is it? What does success look like for them and for him?
The statement that was issued in Ohtani's name the other day used the word parades. It was plural. That's the definition.
That's what it was. And what about for him personally? Not just parade. I mean, continuing as the two-way player. I mean, does he need to put the finishing touches on the greatest baseball career we've seen?
You know, that's a great question. We've sort of had these debates about, you know, if he retired tomorrow, would he be elected to the Hall of Fame? Notwithstanding the fact that I know
the 10-year, yeah.
The 10 years. But, you know, has he done enough? Because it's unprecedented. Babe Ruth never did this stuff for this long. So I think he's had enough of individual success. I don't think he's opposed to it by any means. But, you know, when you've been out of it every single September, like, you know, let's see what it's like with the season on the line. Let's see in October, because everybody saw what he looked like in the World Baseball Classic last spring when he struck out Mike Trout to clinch mm-hmm. the championship for Japan. And you've hardly ever seen a guy smile that widely.
Yeah, it was remarkable. Well, I mean, Los Angeles hasn't lacked for stars, and I could definitely go down the cliche route and mention Hollywood and all that stuff, but it has collected its fair share of sports stars too. Gretzky, LeBron James. And I'm just listing like two of the best who have ever played their games. Is Ohtani in that realm? And what does this do for LA to have Ohtani there?
Well, it certainly gives them another name to put up on the marquee. But I think the main thing here is that he doesn't have to come in and be a savior like he might have had he signed with some other teams.
Interesting.
You know, Mookie's already there. Freddie Freeman's already there. Buehler's already there. Muncy's already there. Kershaw, depending on how his shoulder heals, might decide to come back to the Dodgers midway through the season. So if you're looking at Kershaw, Mookie, Freddie Freeman, and now Ohtani, in theory, that could be four Hall of Famers on one team. That doesn't happen that much.
No.
And it's not just him.
So this isn't Gretzky going to the Kings, though. That's not what this is.
No, Gretzky actually left an incredible legacy, not of multiple Stanley Cup championships.
Well, he did. But
of building hockey in the Sun Belt. Because when he came here, all of a sudden the Disney company started getting interested in hockey and started what was then called the Mighty Ducks. They've been very successful in Anaheim. There's a mm-hmm. team in San Jose. There's something in the Phoenix area that is sort of a homeless National Hockey League team. Probably not the greatest moment for the NHL, but, you know, Florida's got team. And that's right. All comes to Gretzky. If hockey doesn't work here with Gretzky, I don't know that any of that happens.
Well, I mean, could the Dodgers and Ohtani be kind of the I mean, the Dodgers have global appeal, but like, as we look at streaming and trying to create the market and the global imprint, you look at these world tours that they're doing. Could this create warp speed for that, for baseball? If you have the marquee player on one of the royal teams, could that help? Could that warp speed that?
It certainly can't hurt. And nobody has missed in Asia the idea that the Dodgers were already scheduled to open the season in Korea next mm-hmm. year against the Padres, who, of course, have, you know, a great Korean player, but
right.
You know, now it's going to be Ohtani mania in Asia. So, like, what could be better?
All right, last thing I wanted to ask you, Bill, and it's, you know, it's really easy question, short one, I'm sure. Is this good for baseball? I mean, is this good to have its most prominent player and star on one of its most prominent teams? Is it good to have the New York teams and even the Giants with their signing and the Dodgers making the headlines? Is this good for baseball, or do you feel a little bit for Toronto?
Well, I'm Canadian, so of course I feel for Toronto. And I was disappointed at a lot of the reporting and columns on Toronto over the past few days, as if this was some sort of small market. God forbid he should go there. It's like, it's the third largest market in North America.
It's huge.
You'd be marketing to an entire country of 40 million people. It would have been great for baseball.
And Eastern time zone games. How many fans would have gotten to see him that now stay up that didn't because of when the Angels played? That's the other part about it that I thought was like Eastern time zone games.
That's one part. But I think the better part for baseball is he is as close to assured of getting into the playoffs as anybody because he plays for the Dodgers, right?
Mm.
Baseball has become such a local sport. Everybody watches their team on their local cable or satellite channel or their streaming. Nobody's worried about the other team. So that's what happens. You get to World Series with Arizona and Texas and people go, oh, the ratings are terrible. Well, of course the ratings are terrible because nobody watches Arizona and Texas all summer. They watch their own team.
Right.
But if you can get Ohtani into the playoffs, I think people who are used to watching their own team all summer long would say, hey, I might not care about the Dodgers, but I want to see this guy. I haven't been able to see him a whole lot because he plays out in L.A. But boy, in the playoffs, I can see him as much as I want, and I want to do that.
That is Bill Shakin, baseball writer at the Los Angeles Times, does such great work covering the business of baseball, the history of baseball in that area. And he has the best Expos jacket in the business. Bill, thank you so much for joining me. This has been a pleasure talking to you.
All right. Take care, Derek.
The Best Podcast in Baseball is part of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STL Today's Constant Cardinals coverage. You can find all of the coverage there at stltoday.com, including the latest news, columns, analysis, information on where the Cardinals are going with their free agent pursuits on relievers, some of the trade talks that are going on. All of those things can be found at stltoday.com, along with our weekly Cardinals chat. The Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis, and it's a production of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, stltoday.com, and me, baseball writer Derek Gould. For LA Times baseball writer Bill Shakin, I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. Hope you're having a great holiday stretch, and we will talk to you soon.